We're here in Portland, Oregon today for our election road trip. The primary here is tomorrow. Now, there hasn't been much polling done in this state. The most recent poll has Hillary Clinton leading by double digits. But the expectation here is that Bernie Sanders will do better than the poll suggests.
Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Okay. Bye-bye.
At Hillary Clinton's Oregon headquarters in Portland, volunteers were working to drum up support. And many, like May Lum, were surprised that Sanders is still in the race.
I have no idea why Senator Sanders is still in the race. I'm just totally bewildered. I think he should get out of the race so we can focus on the bigger picture.
Gloria Geiser agrees. She says she's not happy with how Senator Sanders is running.
It's a lot of innuendo about corruption and quote, revolution, as if he's going to raise a revolutionary army to do anything. You know, change is incremental, not revolutionary in most Western countries. Most successful change is evolutionary, not revolutionary.
But Charles Tice, an organizer with the campaign, thinks Bernie Sanders has every right to stay in the race to the end. He's focused on winning over Sanders supporters for the general election.
I actually talked to a gal the other day. She said, I support Senator Sanders and his ideas, and I think my support is giving him a voice. But I'm with you guys in the general. So that was something I can respect.
Hillary Clinton has the support of many of Oregon's elected officials, including Senator Ron Wyden. But Oregon is also the only state in the country with a senator supporting Bernie Sanders. Jeff Merkley is in the middle of his second term in the Senate, and he joins us from Washington, D.C. Senator, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. It's great to be with you.
Well, how much longer do you think that Senator Sanders should stay in the race?
Oh, absolutely through the California primary. Folks across the country want to weigh in on the direction of our country, and an effective way of doing so is their vote in the Democratic primary.
Do you think he still has a chance to become the nominee of the party?
Well, the mathematical path is very, very uphill, very narrow. He's said the same. But the conversation is energizing the party, and it's causing us all to think about the big problems our nation faces and whether just keeping little tweaks to the existing paradigm is going to address our problems, or we need to have a substantial rethinking of the fundamentals, which I think is what Bernie's campaign represents.
But it also is causing some concern, the way that he's running his campaign right now. Here he is at a rally in Sacramento bashing Senator Clinton for having super PACs that he says have raised tens of millions of dollars for her campaign.
Including at least $15 million from Wall Street. Secretary Clinton has also given speeches on Wall Street for $225,000 a speech.
Do you think that at this point in the campaign, given what you just said about his mathematical path to the nomination, that it's appropriate for him to have those attacks still coming at Secretary Clinton?
Well, certainly a substantial part of his campaign is to say that our system of raising cash in campaigns is destroying our democracy, our we the people democracy. And so the way campaigns are funded is very much to the heart of this conversation. And I do think that's a legitimate and important issue for us to be wrestling with as citizens of this nation.
But do you think that he could risk hurting her chances in a general election if she becomes the nominee by doing what he's doing?
I think actually by raising these issues that resonate with voters, it's going to increase the energy that's taken into the general election. This does require that both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders build a bridge towards each other, build a bridge between their campaigns after the California primary, and so we can go into the convention locked arm in arm. But I hope that part of building that bridge will be to have a very strong vision that the winner will advocate for regarding campaign finance reform.
But you think until the California primary, any attacks on Clinton are fair game by Sanders?
Well, no, not at all. Not at all, any attacks. But this issue of talking about campaign finance and the challenges it represents is very real and very important to the future of our country.
Well, let me play you what Donald Trump has done with this. Here he is in Eugene, Oregon, talking about Bernie Sanders and his attacks on Clinton's ties to Wall Street.
Now, I'm no fan of Bernie Sanders, But he's 100% right on that. He is 100% right. Hillary Clinton is totally controlled by the people that put up her money. She's totally controlled by Wall Street. And her system is rigged.
Does that concern you, Senator?
Well, his argument is completely fallacious. Of course, folks know that Hillary Clinton is not controlled by Wall Street. But on the other hand, if Trump's going to raise that issue, what he should really be doing, if he's exerting any kind of integrity, is to attack the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers, in the last election, essentially bought the U.S. Senate. They put in massive sums in state after state, in Iowa and Colorado and Alaska and a few others, including Oregon and Michigan, and my home state and the campaign I was in. And the result is right now a Senate that is completely controlled by the fossil fuel industry and the Koch brothers' agenda from the very first issue we addressed coming in January. And so this is really right now we're hearing the Koch brothers' team saying, hey, we're going to spend a ton of money to keep control of the Senate. He should be attacking the Koch brothers.
Do you think that he's going to be a tough opponent for whoever becomes the Democratic nominee?
I think you have to treat him as a very tough opponent. He has defied every prognosticator's predictions. This is a situation where folks thought when he attacked John McCain that it would be the end of his campaign. When he attacked Megyn Kelly, it would be the end of his campaign. When he attacked immigrants, it would be the end of his campaign. I mean, we're basically almost all immigrants. And yet he has thrived. So he has to be taken extremely seriously. And his conversations represent such a denunciation of core values that are important to our nation that we must and this goes to my point about why it's so important the Democratic Party come together. We cannot have an individual like Donald Trump in the White House.
Should Hillary Clinton, if she's the nominee, put Bernie Sanders on the ticket with her or in her cabinet if she becomes president?
Well, I won't give her advice on that. I don't think, though, that he's aspiring to a cabinet post. He's looking, as Larry Cohen has put it, not for a moment, but for a movement, that we have to take on trade agreements, including the upcoming TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, which essentially put us on an unlevel playing field. It's no, I mean, everyone can understand that if you're competing against folks earning a dollar an hour, the manufacturers going to move to that country, the country with low labor standards, low pay, low environmental standards, and low enforcement. And that we've seen it time and time again. We saw it with Mexico after NAFTA. We saw it with China after the WTO. And certainly, if we want to have four more decades in which the middle class is absolutely unable to get ahead, then we should pass the TPP. We need Secretary Clinton to come out and say definitively and passionately and clearly that she's going to fight for middle-class jobs, and that means that we're not going to extend to Malaysia and Vietnam an open door that will invite our manufacturers that remain in America to go overseas and undermine the negotiating power of those workers who remain in our country.
But, of course, the president from your party, President Obama, is in favor of the TPP, and he has said that if we don't sign on, these other countries are going to sign on anyway, and we just won't be setting the rules as the United States for trade around the world.
With every single trade agreement that has been advocated by our multinationals, there has been a geostrategic argument. We need to, with the WTO, we need to pull China away from the then Soviet Union. With certainly NAFTA, we need to be the leader in integrating the North American continent. One has to recognize is that if you have dramatically different standards on labor and environment and enforcement, manufacturers will go to the cheapest place to make things. And without making things in America, we will not have a middle class in America. So for three decades, the middle class thrived in America after World War II, 1945 to 1975. You might think of these as three golden decades. But in the four decades since, virtually zero amounts of new income have gone to the bottom 90%, or to put it differently, 100% of new income has gone to the top 10%. Right now in Portland, you'll see homeless camps springing up on the streets because we simply don't have jobs that can sustain families successfully in being able to pay rent. And so,
and you think that's a result of trade deals?
Trade deals are a very substantial factor in this, yes. We've lost probably 5 million manufacturing jobs, and that's before you count the money that those families earn spending it in the economy. So it's even more jobs when you have the multiplier effect.
So, but you do believe in trade?
Absolutely. Trade on a level playing field. During those decades after World War II, where we expanded our trading relationships with countries with roughly similar standards in environment and labor, it was a win-win situation. Think, for example, if you were to select one state, let's take Idaho, for example, and Idaho was to have no minimum wage or minimum wage of less than a dollar an hour, no environmental standards and no enforcement. Every manufacturer in the rest of America would flock to Idaho and the other states would be bereft of jobs. Well, that's exactly what happens when you do the same thing with Mexico, China, and now, as proposed, in Malaysia and Vietnam.
That's Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon. Senator, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.